Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice, the Forgiveness Doctor. And today is our Memorial Day celebration, 353. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 that puts you in queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear from you, your comments and your questions. Welcome to the show. Hi, Michael.
Hey, sweetie. Here we are in a cloudy, rainy day in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. No sunshine for us today. So for you who are enjoying sunshine, send us some. We'll gladly receive it. And other than that, we're delighted to be sharing this hour with you on the ancient Aramaic idea of forgiveness and learning and understanding and putting to work that tool in our lives. When she mentions Memorial Day, the conversation there is about the fact that we want to remember those who've been forced into the non-human, insane world of war and have built an identity based in that, that anomaly for human beings called war, that, heroism and all the the belief in the necessity to kill others in order to live a life that is safe and full. And we're offering that while that has become to some degree a truth, it's not true. It's only become a truth because millions have been scammed into believing that it's a necessity. And so we're here to put an end to that necessity. We're here to play a different game. We're here to play the human game. What does the human game look like? Well, if you've ever held a newborn child, you know exactly what human life is. If you're not living out of that, then just know that you're not living a human life, and we're inviting everyone into truly living as human beings. Everyone we ask all around the globe has the same answer for human life. It is the active presence of love. And so, here's our request. Be human. Function as a human being. Well, Michael, there are all those terrible people out there that make me so angry and make me afraid and threaten me and make me feel like there's something to be afraid of. And yes, there is something to be afraid of, and that's the content of your own mind. And when you heal your fear, then that will disappear. The content based in fear will disappear. The logic of fear will become insane and illogical to you. And as you gather yourself as a human being and you come forward into the world functioning truly out of the active presence of love, you will have opportunities to learn forgiveness. And forgiveness, not in the sense that the Greeks have taught it to us, that we let other people off the hook for what's happening inside of us, but forgiveness in the sense of going inside yourself and removing what never belonged from your mind. That is all hostility and fear so that you could live a human life. How is it that we're going to put an end to war on planet Earth? Well, here's the game. We invite you today and every day to be responsible for, just take one issue, one place where you have some form of hostility or fear. where you hold your breath and you want to explain to someone else how they're the problem in your life, and you stop and recognize that every time you've been through that particular issue, you're the one who's been there, and you start to recognize that maybe that's about you. And then you start applying the tool of forgiveness. The tool of forgiveness takes you inside yourself and removes what never belonged. Nobody has ever told us that forgiveness was about removing content from your own mind, from your own physiology, from your own emotions. But that's what it is in its original sense. When you hear the man Yeshua saying, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother, that's not a bleeding heart statement. That word heart in the ancient Aramaic would be our equivalent word today of the unconscious. You must remove from your own unconscious, from your own hidden parts, that which you project and blame everybody else for. And as you do, you get free of it. When you're free of it, you get to live a human life. Yeah, that's all. So we're inviting you to jump on our website, www.whyagain.com. And on the right-hand side, there's a link that says Download Worksheets. We invite you to click that link, and the first 7 items in that section will give you the whole story of how forgiveness works. And when you begin to remove what never belonged from your structure, that is all hostility and fear, you'll find that this game of life is a whole different process. And so we're glad you're with us. If you have questions, if you start to work with that tool of forgiveness and you have questions, we're here to support you and here to answer those questions. And so, Jeannie, I see we've got a caller on the switchboard.
We do. Our first caller is 970. You're on the air.
Welcome to the show. We're having trouble hearing you. I can tell you're trying to speak, but I'm just getting like maybe a half a letter of each word. So maybe if you dial back in, and we'll take another caller, and we'll try again. 970, our apology.
Okay, so Erica 517, you're on the air.
Good morning, Michael and Jeannie. This is Tony.
Welcome, Tony. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, I should say. Good. I just called to share a little bit from our support group meeting we had last night at Rex's. And
cool. How'd it go?
Good. It was a really good meeting. A lot of people shared, and it was a lot going on. So one of the things that came up was someone was talking about doing worksheets on the same issue and having it kind of reoccur. And
yes,
what we looked at was that the goal that he was canceling, he was canceling kind of a negative phrasing of the goal, and we talked about what a constructive phrasing of the goal might be, and
right.
That brought up a lot. But when I got home, I decided to do the same thing with a goal that keeps coming up for me, which was wanting things to be easy. And I ended up, because I thought, well, that's a constructive way of wording my goal, but I just, you know, I had that intuition to just rephrase that goal to be work hard and earn my right to have a good life would be my goal. When I did that, it actually opened up some new insights for me, just making that small switch from wanting things to be easy to actually seeing that I had a goal for myself to work hard in order to earn a right to have a good life. And it ended up leading to some stuff that was kind of connected to it with me being a kid, and when I would get punished in my family, my dad would have us go into our bedroom and close the door, and we'd have to sit there for an hour, And I realized that there was this part of myself through that where I was disengaging from activities to make things better. And you know, it was just, it was really insightful just switching that goal, you know, to the opposite of what it was that I was putting down there before. So I thought it would call
your file on your beliefs and your file on working hard was key for you in that. That's powerful.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a nice wrinkle and insight into the process.
What,
and
can
the
you,
importance of.
Oh, excuse me. One of the the things that gave me the insight to switch it to is we watched your video, the Circle of Life. Is that what it's called?
Right. Yeah.
Living the Circle of Life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Circle of Life and how to play it.
Yeah, and in that you talk about us wanting things to be easy and actually you specifically, I think you said something to the effect of wanting something for nothing, and you distinguish the difference between freedom and liberty, which I really keyed into there. So I was just offering that up as maybe something you could expand on or talk about a little bit. The idea of the difference between freedom and liberty.
Sure. Yeah, that's a very powerful and misunderstood concept in our world. Our world has this, you know, insistence on I want freedom, 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 as though there was actually a possibility of freedom. And the point I like to make in that regard is that it is impossible to have freedom because with every action comes a result. And so many people want to engage in a behavior that they know produces a particular result, and they don't want to deal with that result. They want to think that they have the freedom to engage in that behavior and be free of consequences, which we're not. So the difference to me between freedom and liberty is to understand that with everything we engage in as creative beings, everything we engage in produces a result. And we have the liberty to engage in that behavior, and then we have the obligation to live with that result. You know, somebody steps off the cliff, the person who cries freedom says, well, I want to step off the cliff and have no consequences. I want to be able to fly. And the person who recognizes that there are results from stepping off the cliff says, well, you know, I step off the cliff and at the bottom bones break. That's just the way it is. And in many cases, people want to, for instance, say, engage in behaviors that are self-destructive and yet not be destroyed. Or when they move into the self-destruction, they want somebody else to take responsibility for and fix it for them, which, of course, can't happen. So we certainly have liberty, but freedom's pretty slim. We have the liberty to do what we choose to do, and then to live with the results of our choices becomes key, I think. Takes us into another realm. So many people today are engaging in all kinds of crazy behaviors, expecting not to have to deal with the result, and then being upset when the result shows up. So, you know, for instance, some people engage in behaviors they know create horrendous diseases, but they want the freedom to do that. And then they want somebody else to pay the medical bill, which is pretty crazy. Does that fit kind of with what your question and the direction you were thinking of going with it?
Yep. Yeah. Cool. Well, it did. It just brought up a lot for me, and I'll have more worksheets, I'm sure, around it to work on. But I'm just calling to share that, and also. Just to share my thanks and gratitude for your work.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tony. We appreciate your input and calling. And each of those little refinements is really powerful to get a hold of. And that's a fun video, that Circle of Life and how to play it. That's something I've worked on for a little better than 25 years now, and it's still not complete. And so we don't actually have a poster that we publish on it yet. hoping to get close to that. It's just one of the other plates that we're spinning to get that into a poster format that will be available to people from the Circle of Life and how to play it. In the meantime, if you want to tap into that, of course, you can go to the website, and the DVD is The Circle of Life and How to Play It. Well, thanks for your report on the support group in Lansing, and thanks to Rex for organizing it and working with folks. And were there any particular breakthroughs for anybody else to share from the group? Anything exciting to share about the process last night? It's always inspiring when a support group kind of reports in and shares what happened.
Yeah, I guess for myself, what came up for myself around a lot having to do with my relationship with my son and seeing that I'm able to take ownership of a lot of the things that I mean, that video especially kind of illustrates really well how we have two ways of looking at things, and it shows how what shows up in our life is what's happening inside of our heads, and I see that happen quite a bit with my son, and I do take ownership of it. But what I was having confusion about was, you know, if I go and do a worksheet, when something is triggered in me around my son, what is my role as a parent in supporting him and his growth? And so it revealed, or Rex helped me see the confusion coming from many different voices that I have in my head of what it looks like to be a parent and also my relationship to authority figures and I forget some of the other things that came up, but we just went through a process of canceling each of those, and I still see that I have more work to do on that, but it's helpful to instead of, you know, just being me in a worksheet, it's helpful to have somebody else like Rex, you know, guide me through the process, gives me different perspectives. And,
right.
And there was another. Go on.
Yeah, one of the things to recognize is that your son's very birthright is to experience you as the active presence of love.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you have as your birthright to experience your father as the active presence of love. And if you didn't get to experience him as that, then chances are, because of the codependent dynamic and the power person issue that we introduce in codependence to interdependence, that when the stress is up and the chips are down, you'll disconnect from, as a parent, you'll disconnect from that active presence of love that you are, thus ripping yourself and your son off for both of your birthrights by going back and playing out that power person dynamic that your father did, and or your mother, whichever was the key power person. And that it's the forgiveness process that allows us to go in and delete those power person dynamics so that we can serve up our birthright to ourselves and to our children and to everybody around us. And that's what's going to restore the sanity of human life on Earth, is when enough people realize, my birthright is to live as love instead of this accumulation of emotional responses based on my power person. It's really key stuff for sure.
Yes, yes. One of the things that I've noticed too is, you know, I look for ways of connecting with my son, and actually, it was just this past week. He's been in a place where, you know, he's not wanting to do the same. He's 14 years old, not wanting to do the same sorts of things with Dad that we used to do, and me looking for ways to connect with him and have, you know, a positive relationship. And I realized that one of the biggest places where we bond is when something does arise between us, and I'm able to hold a space of love and become conscious of where I'm projecting my stuff onto him, and we come to some sort of a resolution with that through that process, and it really, I think, deepens our relationship and his trust in me.
For sure. Have you introduced him to the worksheet process?
I don't really know how to, but I've done that. There's some resistance, but there's some curiosity too. I think there's because I've had the tendency in the past to go into teaching and preaching and lecturing mode with him, and not as much with actual demonstrating the work as much as lecturing about it. So I think there's a bit of resistance that he has when I do share stuff with him. But, you know, he's actually, I think I went through a worksheet with him once that I did, and he did find it interesting. But, I haven't been able to get to a place where he's able to do the work himself, or wants to, actually. So I don't know where to go from there.
Well, a powerful way to introduce it can be when something's up for you, of inviting him to support you and, you know, explaining, you know, perhaps what is up for you. You're in some form of hostility or fear, you know, maybe in regard to an issue with him, or maybe not, maybe in regard to an issue that's not associated with your family. And explain to him how awesome it was the first time you held him as a newborn, and reaffirm his existence as the active presence of love. And that, you know, there are times when you recognize that you've lost your birthright, that connection to the active presence of love. And here's a situation where that's happened. And forgiveness is about removing what takes me out of my connectedness with love. And I just ask your support. Would you hold the space and just support me through this? I can remember when my son, you know, my children were conceived while I was doing this work. And so they were involved right from the beginning. And I can remember a point when my son was about 8 years of age, and he had a big conflict going with his sister, and he was being kind of a bully. And so I, you know, kind of grabbed him by the shoulder. Okay, kid, we're going upstairs and we're going to have a talk. And so we get upstairs to have our talk, and he says, "Oh, Dad, you mean like you say in the workshops, I brought something up for you haven't dealt with yet?" Like, right, thanks a lot, kid. And so my 8-year-old processed me through that issue. I had two older sisters, and, of course, lots of interesting opportunities there. And once he completed processing me through that issue, he then just spontaneously, just kind of out of the blue, started to share some things that he'd never shared with anyone, and especially something that was very emotionally traumatic for him was that when he was 3, he had hit his mother and was carrying from the age of 3, and now he's 8, was carrying guilt and pain about having hit his mother. And so he was able to just, you know, share that, spontaneously share it. And then he's like, "Dad, I'm going unconscious. I need to breathe." And went into doing some still point on his own. You know, just asked for support. So it can be powerful, a powerful way to introduce it. It can be just to own and to show the, you know, the tendency we as parents are is that we're going to model our perfection and our genius and all that sort of stuff, as opposed to being able to model responsibility when we're in weakness. They see our weaknesses. they're only too aware of them. And when they see a parent who has the strength and the courage to own their weakness, to be responsible and language their weakness about themselves and ask for support, it's like the child gets the opportunity to say, "Oh, so this is what adults do. This is what a real human being does, as opposed to what a power person does, and that is bully into the ground because they're feeling weak or, you know, or helpless or whatever, something's up to them. So just by modeling it, by owning your issue, I think is a powerful way to introduce it and then ask for support. You know, geez, I just really need some support at this point, and I wonder if you'd be willing to hold the space. And, you know, you might say, well, what does holding that space look like? What does that mean? I say, well, you know, let's just take a minute and tap into the presence of love. You know, I do it easily when I think about having held you as a newborn. And, you know, when you held your baby sister, do you remember that? I mean, we've had kids 6 and 7 who've been so clear when they held that newborn of what their baby sister was or baby brother as love. And, you know, that you both tap into that and holding that space for each other. And then, you know, going ahead and doing your piece of work around that can be really powerful. And the modeling of it opens a space for him to then. There was that old saying, children learn what they live. And, you know, when they live that, it's powerful.
Right, right. Well, I've been moving in that direction.
Awesome. Well, very cool. We appreciate your call and appreciate you doing the work and sharing it. And we'll look forward to at some point getting face-to-face.
Yes, and you come up to Michigan.
All right.
We'll
all right.
Do it. Awesome.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have another caller, area code 970. This may be the one that we lost earlier. Well, they just disappeared again. Let's try it. Okay, 970, you're on the air. 970,
welcome,
you're on.
Welcome, 970, you are on. I think 970, is that Carrie? And I wonder if she's having some phone challenges. I know she said she had switched over to a landline. And I wonder if maybe being on her landline is not working properly.
No, she's on, but or whoever it is on. 970-507 are the first 6 numbers, and you're on.
Yeah, that's Carrie, but her phone. Well, and 570 is her cell phone, so I don't know what's happening. Carrie, maybe try from the landline.
All right, I'm going to
but
turn on the next caller. It's another 517 number.
517, you're on the air.
Oh, I think that's me. It's Mitzi.
Hi,
it
Mitzi.
It is. It's Mitzi. Hey,
hi,
you're
hi, everybody. I have a couple of questions, different as well, but the first one is related to the personal code evaluation.
Okay. Yes.
Is there a place on your website where I could find myself a mind shifter? I did find my numbers.
Okay, if you look at your, you've got the feedback sheet we gave you during the intensive?
With all of the scoring on it, yes.
Right, so that feedback sheet has a mind shifter right on it.
Okay, so if I have imbalance in love of truth, it doesn't matter which way the imbalance is, it's the same mind shifter.
Right.
Correct? Okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. The other question is about the Rachma and Kuba filters.
Yes.
I know that these aren't physiological per se. They're not part of the matter part of us. But do you think that those are states of consciousness, like Ruka, or?
I would say that they would result in states of consciousness. I wouldn't call them states of consciousness themselves. In the Aramaic, for those who might not know what we're speaking of, there are two words. One of them, the word rachma, is the word that was used when they said to Yeshua, what's the first law? And the Greeks translate that as love for the creator and for neighbor and for self. In Aramaic, the word rachma actually translates as a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that allows the mind to only use intentions keyed to love and forming goals. And so that's like, it's like the starting point of perception. And if the starting point of perception is on track, that is in tune with human life, then the ending point, perception and behavior, is going to be on track. So that's where Yeshua comes up with the genius of saying the first law is you maintain that condition. And in Aramaic, it speaks of maintaining this condition of love when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor. And then as opposed to saying as self, it says in order to maintain self. So how do I maintain a human life? I have to keep the gateway for human life to enter my form open. That gateway is called Rachma. So that's in the frontal lobes of the brain, and then the back of the brain over perception, there's a second word in Aramaic that was kuba. And the word kuba is a filter over perception that allows the mind to only use memory based and connected to love to form our perceptual realities and therefore our guidance system. The two filters together were called perfect love. And they said perfect love casts out fear, meaning that if you have both of those filters set, your mind cannot produce a fear or an hostility-based reality. So the result of keeping those two filters active is that you'd have a consciousness of love. You'd have that, you know, that birthright, that connectedness to the active presence of love. That's how I would see it.
Okay. So it's not like Ruka de Kucha, who is a being.
In Aramaic, an actual elemental force.
An elemental force. So
yes,
the filters are different.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Ruka de Kucha, again, for those who are listening to the show who might not be familiar with the language we're using there, is the Aramaic of the words that were translated to mean Holy Spirit in Greek. Nothing there about a disembodied spirit being, however. It speaks of an actual feminine elemental force that, when invited into activity, undoes the effects of errors and teaches us the truth. So there's no implication, at least that I'm aware, in the words Rachma and Kuba of any kind of an elemental force. It's actually, you know, a filter. And basically what happens when each of those filters is active, it filters out, it blocks hostility and fear, it gates it out, as opposed to Ruka de Kucha, which is an active elemental force that when you say, I need help and I'm ready to be processed right down to my genetic toes around this one, it will go to work for you and do that. So it's a different character, different nature.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. We appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys.
Okay, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay.
But, geez,
like
we have Carrie back on yet.
Tried. It looks like Carrie's tried again, so let's give it another shot. Carrie, you're on.
Hey, you guys.
Hi.
Oh, there she is.
Can you hear me? Oh, good. I know. It's been
we
a really
can hear
weird
you now.
Connection. Good. Yay.
Yeah, the first time you called, it was as though you were like one syllable of each word was coming through. So it was just like bleep, bleep, bleep. And so I think that was a cell phone problem. So,
I'm
glad you're here.
And the first time I called, it sounded like I was in a, you guys sounded really weird. So anyway, I'm glad we're connected. I had called yesterday. I wanted to just share a couple things really quick that have been really neat that have been happening. One is, some mornings I wake up with sort of an unsettled feeling, you know, about something in particular in my life, and I just keep a pile of worksheets next to the bed, and I just wake up, and in my first reflecting moments of the day, I just do a few worksheets on those issues that feel like they're at the surface, and it's amazing how much clearing that seems to be doing for me, and just breathing along with it, and kind of just so grateful for the process, and I know yesterday you guys were talking about journaling along with the worksheets, and I think my thinking style is just a little bit different. We're all made up differently. If I was going to journal along with the worksheets, I'd probably never get them done. It's nice for me to go through and just put short, quick answers, and that ends up working for me, and I end up getting through a thought and then going on to the next one and, you know, where I see a deeper level coming up. So anyway, that's been really neat. And I also wanted to share really quick about, you know, we talk about our genetic encoding and the layers that we have in our genetics. And
right.
I truly love my mom, and she's a really neat lady. She's 84, but she's a very well 84. Most people would never think she's that age. And she's been exposed to your work, as you know. And she calls me sometimes. She has narcolepsy. She called me the other day, and this is something that's taken place over many years repeatedly. And finally, the other day, I was able to handle it differently. She called me and said, "Oh, I'm really tired and I'm really worn out and I'm not sure, blah, blah, blah," you know. And I kind of felt myself just getting pulled into this vortex, of which I am certainly very connected because she's my mom and the genetics are right there. And feeling myself just pulling down into this, "Oh, my gosh, I want to go to sleep." Oh, and I started not even responding to her, like, "Oh, yeah, Mom, that's nice. Okay, I got to go. Bye." You know, and then I thought about it, and it took me about 24 hours to come up with a really positive, like, way to respond to that, to my own reaction to her. And I called her back, and I said, "Mom," I said, "you know, remember, I want to add a P.S. to our conversation the other day. You know, you were talking about being tired, and I've kind of encouraged her repeatedly to get more exposure to your work and through either the radio shows or however. And so I kind of told her, I said, you know, when you're feeling tired like that, it's because these old genetic patterns are coming up, and part of the escape mechanism is wanting to go to sleep." And she said,
"Oh, exactly. That's
really interesting." And I said, "You know, I feel myself pulled into it when you start talking about it." And I realized, you know, I'm wrestling with my own genetic overlays that some come from you, but some come from many generations. So we had about a 20-minute talk about this. And her husband also has sleep apnea. And she said, "Oh, do you think sleep apnea might also be a shutdown mechanism?" And I said, "Yeah."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Look at what he experienced in his life. There's got to be some, you know, buried grief about that." And she said, "Oh, yes, he even tells me that there is." And so it was just this really wonderful conversation, and I wanted to share it because for anybody who listens to this at some point in the future, I think it's so easy to get pulled in, you know, especially in our closest family, to whatever patterns have been there for years and years and years. And to just take a deep breath and to really reach into the heart, and whatever that person can understand, begin sharing with them some really of the new views and developments that are happening within me because I'm doing this work, you know, and to share with them, "Here's a tool. Here is a way to..." And so I said, "Mom, you know, you come home and you want to go to sleep anyway," and she sits at her computer and does puzzles. I said, "Mom, turn on one of Michael's radio shows. Take the 2 minutes. You're computer literate. You can do it. You like him. You're probably going to go to sleep anyway because you're going to be dealing with unconscious patterns at first. So sit there and do a puzzle and listen to one of Michael's radio shows and begin shifting those brain cells." And she, by the time I was done, she was so excited. She was like, "God, I'm so glad you called me back to tell me this." And it's so exciting.
That's
amazing.
Cool.
That there's a pathway out of this. And, you know, who knows what action somebody will take. But and then I've also had the family of my former in the other side of the state here. The mother of the kids and the grandkids is really getting into your work, and they've been ordering videos, and they just watched the codependency one, and she is just grasping this, and she's so excited about it. And we're both watching pretty unhappy family dramas unfolding all around, but it's so exciting that she has grasped this, and then she's calling me and kind of we're talking about it. So we're getting to build this circle of energy that hopefully over time will begin seeping in, you know, to everybody. And anyway.
It's awesome. We actually had a support group meeting of support group leaders here in the southeast coast of Florida. We had representatives of 5 different support groups that are meeting here, and one of them you've heard Nene speak many times on the show,
right.
And she shared last night how, you know, a year and a half ago when she started doing this work, you know, life was pretty much drama and trauma for her, and last night she was just so enthused, and she shared with the group that she was at worksheet number 2150 as of yesterday, She had created so much resolution with her daughter, with her family system, Never has had a really decent relationship with the man in her life. Now has someone who's totally supportive of her doing work, and they're playing and they're doing worksheets together and they're healing together. And she, you know, it was kind of cool at one point. She just kind of looked up at the whole room and said, "And you know, I'm just creating my life consciously." And it's just so awesome, and that you have the awareness, and that your mom has the awareness at 84 to be able to receive your input and go for it will change the whole family system. It's just so awesome to watch that happen.
It really is, and it is really exciting, and to see it in kind of, you know, bigger and bigger circles too, and just. So excited to be part of this, and so thankful. So I get
and the young kids.
Go ahead.
You know, when we talked earlier to Tony, and he was talking about his son, the young kids, the things that that happen as the parents begin to work with these tools. There's a fellow that had spent some time at Heartland. His name's Terry. He's been on the show on occasion, but I guess 8 months or so ago, you know, he separated, he and his wife were divorcing, but when she was going out of town, he went to stay at her house and watch the kids. And he came home one night, and the house was just a disaster zone. The kids are now, I think, 11 and 15, and the house was just trashed. And he started going to his stuff. And his 15-year-old son said, Dad, let's look at your goal sheet. Let's see what's going on. You look like you're really under a lot of stress. And his 15-year-old son went over his sheet. He said, "Look at how many goals you've got, Dad, that you're not canceling. You need to start to cancel those goals." And Dad just went unconscious. He said, "I'm going to bed." You know, exactly that. You know, the avoidance mechanism. He shared this on the show the next day. He said, "I'm going to bed." And he did. And when he got up in the morning, the house was spotless. No argument, no struggle, no fight. He started to get into his stuff. His son supports him in healing. And he gets up in the morning. He doesn't say, "I'm going to bed and you better clean this up," or, you know, none of this stuff, which was his family dynamic. You know, his dad was an alcoholic, and he had done quite his own share of drugs and alcohol and insanity in the family system. And, you know, just like, what a different way to resolve things. The 15-year-old who's been given the tools, you know, is the two kids, they actually started out, they were 5 and 9 when they did their first intensive. And it was awesome to watch this little girl, Michaela, at 5 years of age. She's doing energy field work, learning the energy field work, and doing still point breathing with her brother and doing worksheets. It was one intensive the whole family was at a couple of years ago out west, and mom was sitting just relaxing, and the daughter, I guess at that point, was about 7, and she walked through the room. And, you know, we have a requirement in the intensive that everybody do 5 worksheets a day. She said, "Mom, have you finished your 5 worksheets today? I haven't seen you doing them." You know, I mean, it's just, it's awesome. It's
Michael,
so awesome.
You know what you're making me think of is, you know, in this family system that I'm connected to, the grandmother is doing this work, and then her kids, the ones that are her kids' age and the husbands, there's a lot of trauma and drama going on. But then there's little ones that she ends up taking care of a couple days a week who are very sensitive, especially there's 6-year-olds. And I'm thinking she could probably work with them and help them start learning to do worksheets.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah,
it might help those kids cope with what they're being exposed to right now.
Exactly. There's a kid's worksheet. Actually, there's a book that we published that was written by Julie Haverstick, who's at Heartland, and she was a school teacher who developed and did this work for 25 years in the inner city school system in Dayton, Ohio, with kindergarten and grade 1 kids. 1 year, Julie did an intensive at Heartland for kids, and there was a point where there was an upset between a brother and a sister, and the little brother, who's 4, was just being like a stubborn 4-year-old. And then we took an intermission, and we go into the kitchen, we're preparing food, and we come back out. The daughter, who's 9, is out on the porch with the 4-year-old, helping him do a worksheet. I mean, it just changes the whole game for everybody.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think, you know, and these kids are very sensitive and very bright, so I think I'm going to encourage her in that direction, because I think she certainly could and would do that with them. And they're having to be exposed right now to a lot of less than healthy dynamics that are still being carried out by their parents' generation. So, yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah, and there is a copy of the children's worksheet on the website, and she can order the book, Healing Children, Loving Children. It's actually technically out of print right now, but we'll have it back in print within a few weeks and available.
Oh,
so,
good.
You know,
okay.
The whole lesson plan's there to work with kids with it.
Tell me the name of it again.
Healing Children, Loving Children by Julie Haverstick.
Great. Okay, I'll keep posted for when that comes out and make sure she gets a copy of it.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a blessed one. We appreciate you.
You too. Bye-bye.
So cool. You know, I'm inclined to just share, you know, sometimes people say, well, gee, all this work, how many hours do I spend? And Terry, I'm not telling any tales out of school, but Terry shared on the show, you know, as a kid, the beatings were regular and severe. The drug and alcohol use was prolonged in his young life, and the basic trauma and trauma of the way life was carried out when he first started this work was pretty heavy duty. It was, you know, was basically a rage based life, and Terry was actually traveling from Heartland to Asheville, North Carolina, about a year ago. And he left in the afternoon, and so he stopped in a hotel. And he called into the show the next day to just share that for the first time in his life, when he woke up in this hotel, he's going to see his kids and his soon-to-be former wife. And he woke up in the hotel, and he said, the first time in my life, my whole body was just flooded with love, physically flooded with love. And, you know, humans, that's what we're designed for. That's what you are. That is your birthright, literally on a cellular level, for you to wake up in the morning and have a direct experience of the active presence of love in your structure. And if you're not having it, it's because you're holding something different than that in your cells. And what you're holding in your cells is what comes from the family dynamic, the good old family feeling and the genetics. I mean, think about it. We are designed every morning to wake up to a song from our cellular structure. And the song is the literal, physical, active presence of love. Now, if we're waking up to a different song, if we're waking up to a different theme, if we're waking up to pain and trauma and drama and anger and upset and all kinds of excuses and reasons to blame somebody else for it, it's because we're carrying something in our structure that doesn't belong there. This work is about learning to forgive that, learning to remove that, so that our response, especially to those precious little ones who come in as this awesome active presence of love, that our response is a loving one. It's one that comes from the space of love, even when we say the child is misbehaving. You know, the tendency of a parent will be whatever their power person did to them when they misbehaved. Here somebody is 30 years later, the child misbehaves, and they do exactly what their power person did instead of holding a space of love and disciplining the child. Every child absolutely needs discipline. You know what the word discipline means? It comes from the root disciple, which means properly taught. It has nothing to do with getting a stick or a belt and beating a kid up. That's a total fraud and a lie. Yes, please discipline your children. Properly teach them who you are. Demonstrate by your active presence of love. And if you haven't been properly disciplined, you better get to work. You better get reclaiming your human life, because you're designed to live one. And then discipline your children. Teach them properly who they are and what a human response is to everything. And as we do that, the change is nothing less than monumental. And you know, when you look at the way so many family systems, even religious, so-called religious family systems work, so much of it's pure satanic. You know, like the almost the classic Satanism of this rage of anything but love. when the stress is up and the chips are down. And when there's no stress, it's easy to be, oh, yeah, everything's cool. But how committed are you to the active presence of love when the stress is up and the chips are down? How disciplined have you been, properly taught, that you are designed to live as the active presence of love? That's our work together. Jeannie, you've got a caller for us, sweetie?
We actually have two callers. The first one is 954. You're on the air.
Welcome, 954. Give us a
Hi,
name. Where
Michael.
Are you calling from?
Hi, Michael and Jeannie. It's Patricia in Fort Lauderdale. Love to you.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm calling in because I would just like to invite everyone listening if they could provide a space of love and support for me today, because I'm facing some challenges in the workplace and I've had a rough couple of days trying to take these lessons and learn from them, but it's not always easy. And today I'm finding, you know, that I'm feeling some tension like in my chest and I'm feeling anxious and I want to let go of that. I don't want to feel that way. I have done some worksheets on the individuals that are in the office with me, and I'm just finding that the more I'm doing this work and canceling my goals for them, I have an immediate feeling of healing and forgiveness, but then the next time something happens, I find that anger coming up again, because I really do want to be treated with honor and respect and be supported in my office because I am their manager.
Okay, can I invite you to take a breath?
Sure.
Take a breath now?
Yes,
so notice that your mind has a story about why you got upset, and that is because they don't honor and respect you. And I'd offer that's one of your mind's lies. You don't have upset because they don't honor and respect you as your manager. You have upset because you have upset.
Yeah.
And their behavior triggers that upset. And so when I language that I have upset because of what they're doing, I'm now in dissociation and can't heal the part of my mind that holds that upset. When I can shift my language into recognizing, well, when I perceive them disrespecting me as their manager, that brings upset for me. Now my mind can start to, instead of dissociate from my upset, own it. And if you go back and you look at, you know, was there ever a time in your life, like, for instance, perhaps seeing as how this is an authority situation, oftentimes the authority is parent, was there ever a time in your life where you had some form of disregard or disrespect for one or both of your parents? Or they
yes.
for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
So then, as you clear this disrespect and this upset around it out of your field, then you're going to perceive and be empowered to create different results. While you hold to the language, because remember, your mind tells your words tell your mind how to form its realities.
Mm-hmm.
And so if my words are dissociative words, this made me, then I remain dissociated from the part of my mind that I want to change. And when I'm dissociated from it, I can't change it.
Is it possible that a mind shifter could also help me with this situation?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Sure, great. I got a great mind shifter for you if you're ready. You got your
okay.
pen ready?
I am. I have my pen and paper.
Okay, it's safe and healing. And I love it. And then inspire and am inspired to love when my employees disrespect me.
Wow.
Now, of course, if that mind shifter is the right one, the first thing your mind's going to say is, BS, who are you trying to kid? That's crazy. And for those who are listening who think I've just lost it and I'm off my rocker, the mind shifter tool is a tool that's designed to resonate the deeper hidden parts of the mind. It's got nothing to do with what we're trying to create. It's got to do with, how do I access that part of my mind that holds something that I've dissociated from? And so the way that the mind shifter's used is to divide a page in half and write that thought on the left side of the page, and then everything that comes up in response to it on the right side. And what you'll do, because the mind works by resonance, is you'll get that whole file that contains all the energy and issues around being disrespected to dump onto the page. You write on the opposite side of the page. Every time you write the mind shift, you write whatever comes up, and you get to see those parts of your mind and see where your next piece of forgiveness work is. So for anybody who's not familiar with that tool, there's a brief introduction to it. We also have it. There is a DVD on the website that you can order called Mind Shifters, an Introduction to Still Point Breathing. Powerful tool.
I have a question about this, and I'm totally committed to doing the mind shifter, and I'm just curious to see how it's going to change the relationship in the room as I do this work on myself, because I think that's why I've had some frustration triggered today, because I've been doing the work, and then when I talk to them about things happening, like maybe, you know, taking super long lunches or just not doing things that I ask to be done, I talk to them in a way that I think is responsible compared to the way I've communicated in the past, but I'm still not seeing any improvement on that end. So there's a difference between me healing those feelings I have inside of me and then me healing the relationship with them so that things could be more productive in the workplace. Because I think it's about honor and respect, not because I'm a manager, but just because I'm a human being in the room with them. And it's also about getting things done and not taking advantage of the company. And maybe I'm focusing on that part too much, because that's where I find I'm having these feelings of upset, when it's just like, well, you're not doing your work. I'm asking you to do things and you're not doing them, and I don't know how to help you so that you can just do them, if that makes any sense. And that's where I'm coming from. It's more than just a personal relationship. It's just about people being insubordinate because they don't care.
So my input would be that you're right. There are two different issues here, and one impacts the other. So parallel universes, continue to work on cleaning up disrespect. You ever find yourself in current events being disrespectful of anybody in your life, your child, your parents, anybody around you?
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure that I have.
Okay. So that would be a good place to be doing worksheets to clear that disrespect out, so that, you see, it's really hard to demand energetically. It's really hard to demand of someone else what you're not willing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
that
would be the first order of business. There's a great story about Gandhi and in India, and this woman really respected Gandhi, and, you know, there's not much public transportation. They had to walk. This woman had to walk for about 2 weeks with her son, and we're getting real close to closure time, so I'll just do this story and the show will probably cut off. But she walks 2 weeks to visit Gandhi, and her son loves Gandhi, and she says, would you please, my son is addicted to sugar, would you tell him to stop eating sugar? And Gandhi said, come back in a month. And this woman has to walk back home, and a month later she walks back again, 2 weeks walking to get there. And she said, and Gandhi says, stop eating sugar. And Gandhi says, the woman says, why didn't you tell him that a month ago when I was here? And Gandhi said, because I had to stop eating sugar first.
Mm.
So that would be one order of business. And then, you know, the company must have some disciplinary procedures in place, and out of a connected space of love, you need to follow those procedures too in order to bring forward what their commitment is in the workplace, what they're being paid for. That's a separate issue, but at the same time, clean up what's happening inside of you. And we're down to about 10 seconds, so maybe we can continue this question tomorrow if there's more to do with it. And otherwise, bring a stranger with you tomorrow and have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings and thanks for the calls.
Thank you.